But I think if you just sort of like severed a human, if we severed our brains and we saw a cockroach, I don't think we would inherently see that like, oh, that cockroach touched the thing. That means I can't touch it.
Well, I think we should start a Kickstarter and see what we can.
I would like a scientific
Let's start a Kickstarter.
Study.
We'll buy a baby.
We'll
raise them
we'll
in
get
a bubble.
A severance check yes. made. Yeah.
I do wonder, do like kids have an inherent, if you've never seen a cockroach before, would the kid be repulsed by, is there some sort of like,
I don't know.
Genetic.
Because
well, I mean, there is,
I,
there
I
is
grew
something
up
about,
already with media depictions of showing me ooh, gross bugs.
There is something about like small creatures skittering that does trigger something in our brains of like,
yeah.
not good.
Well, that's the lizard brain.
Yeah, aspect. Exactly. So like, I don't know. I do almost think that like, if a kid saw it, they might be sort of intrigued by it, but I do think they would on some level also be like, oh no, like, not a thing.
All right. Well, anyway, this is a fascinating discussion about cockroaches and whether or not you would eat a croissant.
Cockroaches, ooh, question mark?
A cockroach had touched. I don't know that, you know, the thing is, you don't have to because it's a cheap croissant. But if it was, I don't know, a really fancy thing, I might still eat it.
I would.
I don't
if
think
I
would.
Didn't,
yeah.
if I wasn't going to be.
I think I'm good.
Yeah.
And just brush it off. Have you ever eaten something that
me.
Fell on the floor?
No, I don't.
No.
I never eat shit that falls on the floor. Floors are dirty.
I think this is a you guys problem.
It might be.
It might be, but floors are fucking dirty.
To another episode of Why Did We Watch This, the podcast where three friends sit down with a nice drink, watch a troubled movie, talk about what was good, what was bad, and how we could all do it so much better. I am your host for this week, Lee. I gotta go. He's taking a dump in a can. Delahanty.
I'm Chris. Backpacks are for boys. Purses are for girls. Ravel.
And I am Drishler Three Echo.
And if you could not tell by those nicknames, we have just finished watching The Island.
The
I did
Island.
Not write down
no,
the,
sorry,
I did not
I didn't
pull
either.
Up the movie, so
Where
I don't forget what year it's
it?
From.
It's 05.
2005.
Actually, that much. Directed by Michael Bay, of
None
course.
None other. Our first Bay.
Our first Bay. Baby's
our
first Bay.
Our first trip to the Bay.
Yeah.
Starring Ewan McGregor, Scarlett Johansson, Jimon Hansu, Sean Bond, Steve Buscemi. And after that, it's a little bit like it's Michael Clark Duncan's in like two scenes,
yeah.
and then everyone else is kind of a minor character.
Digimon
so.
Digital Hansu.
A digital Hansu.
Digimon
digital
Hansu.
Oh my god.
Digimon are the champion?
Yes, a great movie.
Yeah.
An excellent movie.
All-time best work
all-time.
By everyone involved.
Yeah, just some real high-flying 2005 fun.
What a movie to be our first bay.
What a movie to be our first bay.
Yeah. It's a bit of an old bay.
It is an old bay. Of course you do. It's genetic.
It's delicious.
And of course, to get through this movie, we did need to have a little drinky drink. What did we have?
The drink that we made for the island is called Aces and Spades. It was 3 ounces of Aperol, 3 ounces of cranberry juice, not cocktail juice, half an ounce of orange juice, 4 ounces of Prosecco, a rosemary sprig, and an orange. You add the Aperol, the cranberry juice, the orange juice, and the rosemary sprig to a shaker with ice. Shake it until it's chilled, then strain it into a glass. Top with Prosecco and gently stir. Add a rosemary sprig and an orange slice to garnish.
Now, I am very glad that we use cranberry juice
right.
as opposed to cocktail. Cocktail usually just means they've added in a lot of sugar or,
right.
like, grape juice or something. So I thought it gave it a really, like, super nice, like, bitter, tart
I don't even
edge.
Think you can get... I mean, I don't think they sell. I mean, I looked...
At Whole Foods, yeah.
At Whole Foods, like, I couldn't... I wanted to make sure that it was just, like... Because I was on the fence because I've gotten, like, cranberry juice before there that was, like... undrinkable from
mm-hmm.
how unbelievably bitter it was.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to get that one again.
Right.
But I don't want it to be, like, sugary.
Right, right.
I was looking at the calorie counts and, like, the ingredients. Like, there's so many different varieties. But I don't think they have cocktail there.
Hmm?
Like, it's all juice. It's either from concentrate or not from concentrate.
Yeah.
That's the only difference. Right?
Yeah. Which is kind of negligible for the purposes
yeah.
of
I think I got from
the,
concentrate.
I think you might have, too.
Not from concentrate.
Yeah, I think yours was from concentrate,
because
which is,
the
like,
one,
fine.
I think I got the not from concentrate, and it is just, like...
Too
impossible
yeah.
to drink.
It's like basically medicinal at that point.
Yeah,
yeah,
it is like, yeah. I tried to drink it on its own and I was like, this is like, I spit it out in the sink.
Unless
yeah.
you have a UTI, it's really hard to
yes.
like push yourself through that bottle.
Yes.
Right, right. The unsweetened cranberry juice is something that comes in handy mostly for, I think, making drinks or something. Not
yeah.
usually something you drink on its own.
No, for sure.
Which worked for this, I think.
The rosemary was nice.
Yeah, it was certainly, you know, a wintry, citrusy sort
mm-hmm.
of drink. You've got your cranberry, you've got your orange, you've got your rosemary. It's a little bitter, just a little sweet. Yeah, this one really worked for me.
Between that and pizza, my body was like, so we're taking a nap now? We're going to sleep now?
Because 1 year ago when we did the Magic Flute, we ordered Papagino's, as is befitting because of the character Papagino.
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 It was close enough.
Papagino.
It was close enough for me.
It was, yes. And so we decided, why not do it again? One year later.
Why not?
This is our yearly Papagino's purchase. And what can I say? It hits.
We all took turns dancing around the room, singing everyone's favorite as we ate pizza.
It is one of those weird things where it's like, I didn't grow up in New England, so I've never had Papagino's until probably like the last 10 years or something. And it's one of those things where, like, and yet weirdly it still scratches the similar itch of like every local pizza chain, you know? It feels like whatever regional chain you might have gotten pizza from as a kid reminds me of Papagino's. So like it kind of works in that respect.
We had like a informal like belated Christmas because of multiple puppies in the extended family, and like, so Ian and the kids came down for gifts and they were like, well, we're gonna do pizza, and I was like, can it be Papagino's? This is my one request. And Dad said, yeah, it can be Papagino's. And then I turn up and it's like Central Cafe, which is like a local joint in Middleborough. And I was like, what happened to Papagino's? And he's like, I don't know. He just forgot. But then Ian was like, well, this is better anyway. And Central Cafe is like that sort of like small pub pizza style thing. And I'm like,
do they also call that a spa pizza?
Maybe, yeah, like a spa pizza. Yeah. We call it like a pub pizza.
I've never had pub pizza. It has never come up for me.
It's just like, it's fine. It's fine, but I don't like it. I prefer the Papagino's, the big, long, thin pizza with the crispiest.
Yeah.
And so like, and Ian's like, well, this is better anyway, the pub pizza. And I was like, what are you talking about? How are you even from New England?
Yeah, right.
What are you saying right now?
You're turning on your culture this way.
I was so mad at him.
How dare he be, and then say such heresy.
Patrick said he preferred Papagino's, and I was like, regrettably, I'm on your side.
Alliances must be formed where needed.
Yes. Yeah.
So both drink and Papagino's, we heartily recommend.
Yeah, the drink was great. And Papagino's, as Lee just demonstrated, makes strange bedfellows.
Yep.
Yeah. Lines must be drawn in the sand. So yeah, we had a lovely drink. I don't think I stated my opinion, but I also liked it.
Yes.
For what it's worth. I didn't feel like I was being silenced.
Yeah.
As women often are.
Yeah, I mean.
But
or just taking advantage of your body, as women often are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As soon as a man sees you, he's like, boobs.
And then he says, Jesus must really love you.
Yeah, Jesus really love you.
As he is looking down her shirt, which is just,
Exactly.
Just last drink thought, I just wanted to point out, we had a funny but somewhat humbling moment of when Brendan cut open a Caracara orange. It was so pink on the inside that we were like, is this a grapefruit? Is this an orange?
I did think it was like a small grapefruit at first.
Yeah, and I had a moment of doubting myself. It threw me into doubt that I bought the wrong thing, and then I had to Google, like, because I had to, like, what are the tags? It said navel orange when I rang it up, I swear to God. I checked the tag, and it said Caracara, and I Googled it, and it says, a Caracara is a navel orange that just happens to be
very
really
pink.
Dark. It was pink in the inside, and I was like,
it was pink in the middle. It means it was cooked too little.
It just goes to show you.
Put that orange back in the oven.
Men will always question your judgment, ladies. You just gotta stand firm.
I did definitely try to gaslight you into thinking
you
bought grapefruit.
I bought a grapefruit.
Oh, well. Next time.
I like how I don't really hold to gender binaries, but I wield them like a fucking knife when I have
as needed.
it's my prerogative, I feel like.
Yeah, no, it is. It's also that double say, because it's, even if you don't view yourself that way, that doesn't mean about how you're received.
That way. Yeah. It's how I'm perceived, for sure. Anyway, what a good drink.
What a
good drink for a movie that has an equally subtle and nuanced thoughts about the gender dynamic.
Yeah,
yes.
So subtle. 2005, guys, what a wild time.
What a time to be alive.
This looks like 2005.
It did. Yeah, had teal and orange.
Aggressively, yes.
All over the place.
Yeah, teal and orange.
Bright washed out colors.
An extremely active and at times quite shaky camera.
Right, a lot of camera motion in there.
I guess before we get into it, someone's going to have to
talk about it.
Is it on it? Is there a plot? I guess there is.
There is a plot, yeah.
Thing.
It's
okay,
perhaps a little long, but
oh,
whatever.
Oh, brother, it is.
Yeah, I know. I'll try and blow through this. In 2019, Lincoln 6 Echo and Jordan 2 Delta live with others in an isolated compound. This dystopian community is governed by a strict set of rules. The residents are told that the outside world has become too contaminated to support life, with the exception of a pathogen-free island. Oh, Chris. Sorry. You a hot mess.
I know.
Each week, one resident gets to leave the compound and live on the island by way of a lottery. Lincoln begins having dreams that he knows are not from his own experiences. Dr. Merrick, the scientist who runs the compound, is concerned, so he places probes in Lincoln's body to monitor his cerebral activity. While secretly visiting the off-limits power facility in the basement where technician James McCord works, Lincoln discovers a live moth in the ventilation shaft, leading him to deduce that the outside world is not really contaminated. Lincoln follows the moth to another section where he discovers that the lottery is actually a system to selectively remove inhabitants from the compound, where the winner is then used for organ harvesting, surrogate pregnancies, and other important purposes for each one's wealthy sponsor, of whom they are clones. Merrick learns Lincoln has discovered the truth about his existence, which compels Lincoln to escape. Meanwhile, Jordan has been selected for the island. Lincoln and she escape the facility and emerge in the desert. He explains the truth to Jordan, and they set out to discover the real world. Merrick hires Burkinabe mercenary and former GIGN operative Albert Laurent to find and return them to the compound. Lincoln and Jordan find McCord in a bar, who explains that all the facility residents are clones of wealthy sponsors kept ignorant about the real world and conditioned to never question their environment or history. Merrick explains to Laurent that the public... Merrick explains to Laurent that the public is told that the clones are kept in a persistent vegetative state. Trials had shown that the clones could only survive if the clones had consciousness. Sorry, that the organs could only survive if the clones had consciousness. McCord provides the name of Lincoln's sponsor, yacht designer Tom Lincoln, in Los Angeles, and helps them to the Yucca Maglev station, where they board an Amtrak train to Los Angeles before mercenaries kill him. Steve Buscemi, McCord, is killed. In New York City, Jordan's sponsor, supermodel Sarah Jordan, is comatose following a car crash and requires transplants from Jordan to survive. Lincoln and Jordan evade both the Los Angeles Police Department and the mercenaries and arrive at Tom's house. Lincoln meets Tom, who gives him some explanation about the Cloning Institute, causing Lincoln to realize he has gained Tom's memories. Jordan seemingly agrees to help Lincoln and Jordan reveal Merrick's crimes to the public, but secretly betrays them to Merrick and Laurent, as he desperately needs Lincoln's liver to survive his cirrhosis. Tricking Lincoln into leaving with him, although Jordan had warned him that she believed he was lying, Tom brings him to an ambush that results in a car chase through suburban Los Angeles, and ends with Tom tricking Laurent into believing Tom is the clone and killing him, allowing him to assume Tom's identity. Returning to Tom's home, Lincoln and Jordan give in to their romantic urges and have sex. Merrick surmises that a cloning defect was responsible for Lincoln's memories and behavior, resulting in him and every future clone generation to question their environment and even tap into their sponsor's memories. To prevent this, he decides to eliminate the four latest generations of clones. Lincoln and Jordan, however, plan to liberate the other clones. Posing as Tom, Lincoln returns to the compound to destroy the holographic projectors that conceal the outside world. Jordan allows herself to be caught to assist Lincoln's plan. Laurent, who has moral qualms about the clones' treatment after witnessing their fight for survival and learning that Sarah Jordan may not even survive with the organ transplants, helps Jordan. Lincoln kills Merrick with a harpoon gun, and the clones are freed, seeing the outside world for the first time. After Laurent seemingly gives up his mercenary life, great interpretation, great, thank you for including that, Lincoln and Jordan sail away in one of Tom's boats together toward an island, fulfilling their dream of one day going to such a place.
I love that it wasn't just the island as, like, the specific place that was built up to them. Just an island.
Yeah, just, look, any island at this point would be fine. You know, so we'll take
like,
whatever.
Would Australia just, like, blow their minds?
That's
they're
too
like,
big.
It's an island and a continent?
No, that's
before
too
we get into the cast, I just want to make a correction to the summary.
Yeah, please.
Because we're going to talk about it, I think, a fair amount. When they go see McCord and they get McCord's help, McCord takes them to the train station.
Yes.
The mercenaries catch up to them.
Yes.
Then the mercenaries, because McCord tips them off and says for the two of them to run,
right.
The mercenaries shoot McCord dead.
Yes.
And then the plot just says, oh, they have to evade the police and the mercenaries in L.A. The reason they have to evade the police is because they are suspected of killing McCord.
Right. They're wanted in questioning with his death, which is a little...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, which is, it's been, hours later, and we will be getting into this,
yes.
Because I'm gonna, I have questions.
Yes, as well you should.
But anyway.
Yeah, no, just to throw that in there, yes, that's why
the
police are tied in. In terms of cast, we have Ewan McGregor as Tom Lincoln / Lincoln 6 Echo, Scarlett Johansson as Sarah Jordan / Jordan 2 Delta, Jimon Hansu as Albert Laurent, Sean Bonn as Dr. Merrick, Michael Clark Duncan, who the synopsis does not mention, but pops up in one kind of important scene as Jamal Starkweather, Starkweather 2 Delta, Steve Buscemi as James Mac McCord. Everything beyond here, I think, is not really someone.
I like how, without even blinking, you just say Sean Bonn.
Sean Bonn.
Sean Bonn.
Sean Bonn.
That's his name. That's
Nobody
how you pronounce it
says
in the traditional Irish.
Sean Bonn.
Yeah.
Sean Bonn.
Sean Bonn.
Sean Bonn.
And that's the island, baby.
Wow. What a ride.
What a ride.
We all took
together. What a Christmas.
What a Christmas.
We saw New York, we saw LA, we saw a dystopian silo.
Did we see New York?
We see New York via phone, I guess, because if she's calling the kid, I guess, is in New York.
Yeah.
Which
we
makes it even...
see Sarah Jordan. I don't know why she's credited as Sarah Jordan. She's in a cult.
Well, I guess you see her Calvin Klein ad, so arguably she is playing... Yes. So arguably she's portraying Sarah Jordan in that ad.
There was a lot of work. She had to do a lot of work there to, like, put on a different...
Right. Thinking about, like, who is my character.
Yeah.
You could tell it was a different performance just based on, like, the light in her eyes.
Yeah,
she's different.
Which, thinking about it now, like, I guess it didn't really hit me at the time that when she called, that Jordan is based in New York, and that when she calls the kid in the MSN phone booth, she is, it's not even just like, it would be one thing, I think, if she had like a local phone book and was like, can I talk to Sarah Jordan, please? And it was like, oh yeah, she lives in LA. How many Sarah Jordans are there in the country that it's immediately like, oh, you wanted this Sarah Jordan, right? You wanted this Sarah Jordan, a very popular supermodel? Yeah, let's patch your right into her
right.
kid
maybe
to talk to him.
Maybe that was the whole point. Maybe they just called a random Sarah Jordan. Different Sarah Jordan.
Who's also in the hospital.
I was going to say, that would be pretty great if it was like a Terminator Sarah Connor thing where you have to like work your way through like four other Sarah Jordans. So they'd be like, okay, this one's actually the one we needed. Thank you.
So we open it up with, I guess, just like, it's our first bay, correct?
It's our first bay. Baby's first bay.
First sprinkle of the old bay.
Yeah. First sprinkle of the old bay. We got our first whiff of that bay breeze.
Yeah, dusted our Papagenos with some old bay.
That would taste good.
Probably would.
That would be yummy.
Yeah.
Would you guys have any thoughts in particular on Michael Bay?
Makes deeply stupid but entertaining popcorn movies, I think, is my general take on him.
Yeah, okay, can you
usually
name any
fair.
Other movie that isn't The Rock and the Terminator movies?
Armageddon?
Terminator is not him.
I haven't
him.
Seen Armageddon.
Terminator is James Cameron. That's not him.
You're thinking of Transformers.
I'm thinking
Transformers. Sorry. Okay, yes, Transformers, yes. He's
just
done five of the seven Transformers
Although,
movies.
That would be pretty funny to see what he would do with Terminator.
Who did Speed?
Jan de Bont, I believe, yes.
I like The Rock.
Michael Bay.
I like The Rock, too. I think The Rock is a fun movie.
Yeah.
I think Armageddon's a pretty fun movie.
I think I like The Rock.
He makes movies that are fun, but if you scratch at them just a little, everything kind of falls apart.
Looking up Michael Bay. I think I like The Rock just because of the people in it. Because it's got
He does.
Sean Connery.
Sean Connery.
Yeah, he does tend to attract good actors, regardless of whether or not they're good in the movie.
Right.
Like, people want to work with him.
I really don't think I've seen that many besides
You might not have,
Rock,
honestly.
Oh, he made, didn't he make Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, he did Pearl Harbor, which I've never seen because it's 3 hours long.
It's pretty
and
bad.
I've heard it's not great, so I never felt the need to see it. He did Pain and Gain, which I've heard is good, but I've never actually
seen.
The Rock and Mark Wahlberg, and it's actually supposed to be like a good low budget movie from him. You know, it's like more on character than explosion shit. And as I said previously, I think Ambulance is fun.
And Michael Bay also directed a whole bunch of Victoria's Secret ads.
I mean, that sounds right. I didn't check, but that sounds right.
That's true.
Okay.
The Transformers, you know, I had fun.
Yeah, Transformers are fun. They're stupid.
It's a bit that
fun.
I kind of maybe roll my eyes.
Sure.
Like, when, I don't know, I would just say, like, as fun as Bay can be, he has some major failures around people of color and women in general.
And gay people.
Well, they're very straight movies, right?
Right, they are very straight, yes.
Very
aggressively so.
Hetero. But I would say, I mean, we saw a little bit of the kind of uncomfortable portrayals of black people, but it was more just misogyny is what we got.
Right, I mean, you have two, there are really only four black characters who matter in this movie. Obviously, you have Jimon Hansu, and you've got then probably Michael Clark Duncan, and then like very bottom tier, you've got Yvette Nicole Brown as one of, as like a receptionist inside the complex, and you've got, I don't even know the actor's name, but he's a construction worker. And, you know, Jimon Hansu and to a lesser extent Michael Clark Duncan have actual kind of characters to play. Yvette Nicole Brown is, dare I say, sassy receptionist.
Just sassy black woman.
Right, she's just there like, hey, did you guys cut open Michael Clark Duncan yet? And she's like, ooh, I love that football player that he is. I saw him on TV and I saw him here and I thought, that's him. That's the football player. And the guy's like, hey, shut up, lady. We got to get out of here. And she's like, well, they're not ready yet. So sit your ass down. It's like, she's so sassy.
Oh,
and then similarly, when you have the construction worker helping Ewan McGregor and Scarlett Johansson out of an improbable fall, which they did not get really injured in whatsoever, he's just yanking them up to the ground. He's pulling Ewan McGregor and he's like, oh yeah, come on up. Boy, Jesus must love you. Jesus loves you. And he sees Scarlett Johansson, how sexy she is. He's like, ooh, I know Jesus loves you. It's like, oh, he's so horny.
It's, yeah. Yeah, it's basically just, like, every kind of puerile bro, like, bro-ish stereotype yeah. you can think
it's
of.
It's also,
both,
like...
Both for good and for ill, go, yeah.
It's,
turn
it's
up a Michael Bay.
Visible and invisible, too, where it's, like, Steve Buscemi somehow has, like a 30-something kind of hot...
Hot wife.
Hot wife.
Or,
wife
girlfriend.
Or girlfriend.
Yeah, whoever.
That he just happily... That happily goes to get him a six-pack.
One,
right, it's...
One that is, like, clearly, like, trying to hang all over him or, like, make friends with his friends. Or,
right.
Like,
yeah.
Be
no,
more
she's trying
life.
To be nice.
And
she's
he's like, God, this annoying.
Right. He says something
get
like, remember the talk we had about the talk? As saying, like, you know, like, hey, remember how I
yeah.
said shut up? Like, go shut up
yeah.
and get us beer.
It's crazy.
Which is one of the, again, like, this is Steve Buscemi who has a shitty house in a town in the middle of nowhere and he's a jerk to her. So it's kind of like, what's
he,
happening? Yeah, how are you here, honey?
He's the one who gave me my nickname. He also has the line where... isn't he the one who has the line where it's like the golden rule is never give
yeah,
a woman
never
your credit
give
card?
A woman your
never
credit
give a woman
card.
Your credit card, he says. Which is hilarious, because you know how women will spend your money, fellas.
It's, mm-hmm. We're like 2 seconds away from like a take my wife joke.
Yeah, please. So I think one of the interesting things... I guess about Michael Bay doing this movie is the first third of this doesn't really almost feel like a Michael Bay movie in some respects. It's a little more restrained
yeah.
than a lot of it is. And then when you get to the second part where they're out in the real world, it's like immediately the color palette shifts.
Yeah.
yeah.
And then you also have car crashes, chases, fight scenes, which you didn't really have leading up to that.
I would argue aesthetically it still felt like Michael Bay when we
sure.
start off.
It yeah. does. I mean,
you
it has...
Sorry, you were also saying that when they get to the bit where it's like, let's do the synaptic brain scan and put these bugs in your eye, that you were like, man, it does feel like Michael Bay is like itching to like, come on, let's get out of this
right, no, it's
sci-fi
right,
and
yeah.
start blowing things
right,
up.
No, it does feel very much like it could have just been done with like, you know, a scan or something. Michael Bay's like, no, there's little bugs, they're crawling
little
into
bugs,
his eye.
In your eye.
Like, make this shit interesting. I am bored right now watching this.
Yeah. That point does come very soon, right? Because there's really no way that, I mean, obviously it all feels kind of vaguely creepy up until
right,
that
sure.
point.
I mean,
but
yeah.
it's more out-and-out sinister when that happens, and it happens pretty soon in the
right.
movie.
I mean, like, this is... So, like, Lee, did you see this in theaters, or did you just, like, see it on DVD or something at some point?
It was not in theaters.
Okay.
It was, like, I think we rented it or something
okay.
or watched it
like,
at the Bryce
around House. The time it came out, probably.
Probably.
Okay.
Closer to it, yeah.
Okay.
Probably, like, after... Because it came out in 2005, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I probably home from college.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, maybe Christmas break or something
yeah.
it would have been. So, I had never seen this movie before this. Chris, had you?
I had not.
Okay. Did you know the premise going into it, what it was about?
Yes.
Okay, same.
I believe I did because, unless I'm remembering wrongly, I think How Did This Get Made did an episode on
I believe
movie.
You are correct. I believe they did do an episode on this.
And I remember them kind of, A, spoiling it, but,
right.
you know, whatever.
Of course.
And then they had also kind of touched on the like, lawsuit plagiarism
yes,
aspect.
Which we'll get into also.
Yeah.
But, so, the thing is, I don't know, Lee, if you had any sense or if you even remember going into it of what it was like, but, like, we at least went into this movie knowing what it was about.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it's about because you've seen it before.
Yeah. Do
it's,
I remember what it was like
yeah.
or not?
I'm just curious. Do you know? You might not, because it was
so
long ago.
I mean,
so
it was
long
so long ago
yeah.
that I think that, like, my now memory is going to just, like, taint it.
Of course.
It. But I was thinking about this when we were talking about it earlier, because you were saying, like, doesn't this tip the hand too early with the bugs in the eye? And it's like, I think you definitely know going into it that there's something wrong about
sure.
the island, that the lottery is bad. Like,
right.
you know the lottery is bad, you're not going to a nice, fun island.
Right.
You just don't know what's actually happening.
Right.
And you know it's not good. So, I don't think that I probably didn't predict, like, their clones being organ harvested. I don't know how you would predict that.
Yeah.
If you did, congratulations.
You're
take
very
your
good
fucking
at watching.
Metal. yeah, like, take your useless metal and go, like, write an essay about it. but, like, I think it's very easy to watch it and be like...
Something's amiss.
Something's
yeah.
amiss, and winning the lottery is not good.
Right, right. Yeah, so I do think it's something that's a little difficult for me to sort of watch this with, like, untainted eyes
mm-hmm.
and be like, what would you, as an audience member going into this opening weekend, have thought watching the first half hour of this
movie?
Who can
say? I mean, I will say it is a little bit of a well-worn trope of, oh my god, did you know that this mysterious kind of lottery-ish thing that happens.
And the fucking story, the lottery.
And then we never
right,
see
right.
them, and then we never... Exactly, exactly. That's a big one. But
yeah.
I'm like, this is also post-Logan's run, where they had
right.
a very similar
right, you've
thing.
Got that. You've got, like, Soylent Green. You've
exactly.
got THX-1138.
But isn't Logan's run, like, everyone over 30 does?
Yes.
Yeah, it is, but it's another one of those, like, a seemingly idyllic society
yeah,
with, like, an underbelly that you'll never guess.
Well, and the idea is that you go into what's called Carousel, which allows you to just ascend.
Yeah.
And so, and you never see this person again, but but you're led to believe they've ascended to this better place. Mm-hmm. So it's like, would you have necessarily gotten every detail of the twist? No, but I agree with Lee that I think as soon as the lottery enters in as like an element here, that's a pretty big sign of like, it's not what it seems.
Sure.
I also just think in general, no offense to Michael Bay, but the way he makes movies is straightforward to the point where like, it's almost impossible for this twist to really work just because the whole front of the movie is communicating there's going to be a turn.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah. I'm not saying, like, I don't think that this movie wants you to be completely blindsided by the fact that there is something going on here. I think, like, as Lee said, you are aware pretty much from the get-go that this is not some wonderful, peaceful place where everything is going great. Mm-hmm. It's, in some respects, you have things like, I was thinking of, I've never seen the movie, but the book, The Giver, where it's sort of like, this is a good society. Everything's all worked out here. Everything's going great. Like, there's no need to ask questions. And, like, we're doing fine. What? That I think, in my recollection, holds it a little closer to the chest in terms of like, oh, actually, oh, yeah, they're killing off children here, mm-hmm, and shit like that. So like, I feel like you have things like that, and then you have things sort of more like this, where it's like very clearly from the get-go, no, you know something is wrong here. Something's going on.
I don't remember they kill off children in The Giver.
I just remember, no, it's something to do with like,
I thought it's euthanasia.
I can't remember what it is. I just know that there's something where like he sees his dad killing someone, and the dad's just sort of like, just doing my job, killing this guy, and like, great, did my job, I killed him, see you later. And it's just like, nope, this is just his job. This is what he thinks his job is. Nothing weird about it. And the Jonas or Jonah, whoever the fuck the kid is like, oh no, the scales have fallen from my eyes. Right. Paul on the road to Damascus. Anyways, so there's that. But what I guess I'm just saying is that it's sort of strange to watch this movie knowing already what's happening in it and thinking to yourself, like, would this experience have been better if I didn't know
maybe
what the plot was? What, like, would it have shocked me? Would the specifics of it have surprised me?
I minded to think we wouldn't have necessarily been shocked. I think it would have been maybe kind of like, oh, I didn't necessarily see that coming.
Right.
But it is difficult for me to imagine being shocked. But yes, I think as you were commenting on earlier, my perception of it is inevitably tainted by
I've
seen it.
I don't think you're meant to be shocked by anything in this movie. I think you're just supposed to, like, you're just waiting for the explosions.
Right, I mean, and also, like, to be fair, we say that, like, the twist of the island. I hesitate to call it a twist because it comes relatively early in the movie. Like, it would be a twist if the entire movie was them thinking, like, we're an idyllic society. Then in the last 20 minutes, it was like, just kidding, you're clones and we're harvesting your organs. So, like, you know from fairly early on that all is not well here. And it's just sort of an escalation of that. It's what specifically is not going well here. What's going to happen once the characters find out? What are they going to do? That sort of shit. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. To me, it's just sort of a little bit worth commenting on just because I don't know if I would view this movie as more successful if I didn't know going into what was happening. Would it have made it a little bit better? I don't know. Who could say? But I just feel like that's worth noting just as a thing.
Yeah. We had made a note to kind of talk about, well, it's kind of related to the plot and things connected to the plot, but the sort of root of this movie being the sort of 70s thriller.
The sci-fi conspiracy.
Sci-fi. We've been talking about
We have, right. We mentioned, Logan's Run, and Soylent Green, THX-1138. Like, all of these are movies that it seems like it's pulling from the visual vocabulary of these movies.
And yes, well, and just the sort of general kind of pulp concept of it all, right? Like, clones realize their nature. It's sort of the typical expected questions of, like, is a clone a human?
Right.
How do we define humanity? I mean,
right, it's very interesting that the movie kind of, like, pays lip service to these questions, and I was like, but we're not here for this, so don't worry.
They're engaging with it on a superficial level, but it's never an actual, like, animating discussion in this movie.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it basically just boils down to multiple people who are coded and just out and out, like, villains in this movie are like, they're not people, they're less than human, they're not real. Yeah.
They're products.
They're products, right. It's not as if that's ever really anything that, like, the characters have a discussion about. Mm-hmm. I think we're just supposed to assume, like, no, they're wrong, because we just spent all this time with them.
Right, we know they're real, because we've seen them have dreams and sex. Love, and yes.
What's wild is that, like, Steve Buscemi says it to their faces.
I know!
Yeah.
He's like, well, you're not like me. I'm real.
Right, you're not real people.
You're clones.
Right.
Which is, like, I guess what he's been told, and maybe what he's telling himself, maybe, but, like, it's wild.
No, it is. And it's
It's wild that they don't say, I am real?
Yeah, like, I'm sorry, back up a second here. Like, I'm sitting here and I can tell you. It is... The Steve Buscemi thing is a little... Because everyone... Lee, you had said basically watching this, like, everyone who works in this facility is, like, an unconscionable monster. Like, they have, like, no scruples or morals or whatever they're telling themselves to get through the day.
Right.
Is just... It's an insane thing to do. Like, you see this woman holding up a baby for a woman who... A clone who is used as a surrogate. Mm-hmm. And the clone woman is like, oh, can I hold the baby now? And the one's like, just in a minute. You're going to hold her in a minute.
While she's ready to inject
a... Right. And she's, like, strapping her down while the other doctor is injecting some sort of, you know, poison or something into this woman's IV drip. And she's just sort of standing there with this sort of, like, passive, vaguely smiling look on her face holding the baby. Then you see her later going to the actual woman who this woman was a clone of and giving her the baby and being like, and here's baby, like, everything's great, like, have a good day.
And then she's just like, and we'll discuss the termination of your contract.
Right.
Later.
Yes. Yeah. It's just one of those things where, like, you see all these people doing these unconscionably evil things who all... I don't know. Is it just like, is it that they're very good at lying to themselves? Is it that they literally live in a society that has told them, no, these are less than, in fact. And it's like, that's kind of one of those things. I feel like there's several things in this plot that don't really get addressed as much as they should get addressed. And that's kind of one of them to me. The idea that, like, what do the people in this facility, by and large, think? Are they just content to look the other way? Have they been told their entire life that, like, no, don't worry. This is like sheep. They're like sheep. They don't really feel anything. They don't know anything. Like, just go with it.
Again, it's not fully discussed.
If you're a doctor, you have to know that's not real.
Yeah, I agree. And there seem to be actual doctors there because they're taking out people's organs. And everyone's like, just sort of like, well, got to take out his liver.
I feel like for that to be the case, you have to be... One of the employee perks has to be you get a clone.
I mean, honestly, if that were the explanation, that'd be perfectly fine, frankly. Yeah. If they were just like, oh, everyone who works here also gets a clone for emergencies, as long as you keep your mouth fucking shut and keep your head down to your work.
I think the closest they come to getting to an interesting place with that tension, because I agree that is, like, one of the more fascinating aspects of this. Like, what do the people actually doing the evil shit feel about this, like, you know, on behalf of that company? The woman, the female, I'm guessing she's a doctor, with the baby, that's the closest it comes to, like, doing something interesting with that, because she is so kind of ambiguous in her reaction.
Yeah, it was. I agree. It was a very interesting face.
Right. She's doing some very interesting acting and choices where, like, you can't even read if she's, like, repressing something or if she's okay with it or what she's doing.
It's like a weird, like, customer service face she's putting on. But I like that a lot more. That to me was giving me way more than just the scene of those, like, security goons laughing over
Michael Clark Duncan, like,
getting, like,
plastering that other guy. Yeah,
and. I understand that the movie is trying to, like, show that, like, look, they've become inhuman in the way they have, like, dehumanized the clones, whatever. Yeah. I completely get that. But it never breaks into something really dimensional in this movie. And I know that's maybe not Michael Bay's intention. He's probably not that interested in it. It's more of just sort of a note to how, like, evil they all are.
Right.
But... And I don't even know how this movie would have handled going down that road, but it was so much more interesting. Like, the baby scene was probably the most interesting example of that. I just sort of rolled my eyes at the Michael Clark Duncan one because, I don't know, they're just these, like, lunkheads laughing about a guy falling down.
Right. And
yeah.
I mean,
we really know they're good.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I do feel like it's not impossible that these people could somehow be... conditioned to view them as other, because I feel like we see that in real life all the time where, like, you view, like, this race of people as less than human, therefore if you kill them, I don't really care.
The difference, right, is, like, the scene, I'm gonna make an analogy that only certain people are gonna understand.
Great.
But the scene with the, I guess you're calling it the Michael Clark Duncan scene, I presume that's the guy who plays the guard.
Well, that's the football, he's the football player.
The one where they get him. Yeah, but they're all making fun of that guy.
Yeah, they're watching the video of him knocking a guard into the glass and being like, damn, he hit the guard.
Is a badly written and acted scene in a way that it felt like when sometimes at, like, E3 and stuff or, like, video game conferences, online games, they will have, like, Ubisoft was really known for doing this. They would do, like, these press conferences where they would display their game and they would have, like, instead of getting real gamers to play them, they would, like, pretend, they would get, like, actors to pretend like they were, like, real gamers, and they'd be like, oh, let's team up, squad, and take down, look, I found a big enemy over there. Let's go kill it together. Okay, team, I'm covering your six. Like, they would get, like, you know what I mean? Like, and it just rang really hollow.
Right.
Really obviously, like, not force. Organic.
Right,
and forced.
Right.
And that's what that felt like.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It just feels very, like, yeah, obviously that's what that these stupid guards are going to do. And every line felt like the lowest common denominator.
Sure. Like, the most basic version of what you could do in that scene.
That's sort of, I think, just the movie in general. A lot of its choices are the most basic and common denominator choices.
Yeah. But that was, again, the The baby scene was not. And maybe it's because it was down to that woman's performance choice. Because there was no words in that.
Yeah.
No, not really.
And I mean, I feel like the movie does, I think, occasionally sort of stir up the possibility of being a little more interesting than it is. Like, that scene, I think Michael Clarke Duncan does very well with his, like, one scene in the movie, basically. Like, it's really, you sort of really feel for him as he's running down the hallway and they're, like, you know, shooting harpoons at him, pulling him back. He's like, no, like, you promised that I was going to... Yeah.
That happened several times throughout the movie. Oh, those little, like, barbs.
Yeah, which, I under the skin, it's very upsetting to watch.
Hated that. That was tough.
Yeah. And I mean, there are things like, I think even, I believe it's toward the end or something where Sean Bonn is talking to Jimon Hansu about like why he's doing what he does with the lab. And it, like, you are almost raising interesting ideas what we're talking about, because there is like, this whole thing is such a slippery slope and you could easily have a very long conversation. Not that I'm saying like this movie wants or should have a very like a 20 minute scene of Sean Bonn just being like, let me pose you some hypotheticals here, Jimon. But nonetheless, this is something that you could wade into, and the movie just has no interest in it beyond the initial lip service sort of real quick, like, oh, but this is what I believe, this is what I do, now go collect your money and get out of here, Jimon Hansu. Yeah. And like, that's kind of all you get. So there are, I think, interesting concepts at play in this story. It's just, I feel like Michael Bay and the writers have no real interest in dealing with them.
I get it. Like, I get that it wouldn't be the same movie. It would be a different movie. Maybe a more interesting and better movie. Mm-hmm. But maybe a less exciting movie.
Right.
Right? Like, it's just a choice that you make. Like, if you're going to focus on this action plot of, like, the two of them running away from Jimon Hansu the whole time, then, yeah, absolutely, let's not get into, like, the ethics of what these people are doing.
But then, like, the plot itself clearly wants to discuss it. Like,
it does it's getting, it delves, there are scenes that delve too deep into it that make us curious enough.
Exactly.
That, maybe we shouldn't be focusing.
Right. Yeah, I think that might be it there. It almost, like, there are so many things that this movie kind of brings up and then dismisses or just explains away. Where, like, the thing about how all of the clones, they try to keep them in suspended animation, and then they realize that if they weren't alive and living and moving, their organs would fail and not be used for transplant. Which, like, makes no sense, but at least the movie is explaining it.
And you can see, like, the narrative mechanism under that, right?
Sure.
Because they need to invent a reason for why they created full humans.
Right, exactly. Like, that is the contrivance that we all must accept for this movie. Like, you have to accept the fact that for some reason their organs won't work if they're in stasis, or else the movie just falls apart for you. So, like, you have to get on board with that, and that's fine. All movies have these contrivances that we have to get on board with. But then you also have certain things where it's like, well, we educate them to be roughly the age of 15, and we remove sexual desire, but they kind of have sexual desire, and we expose them to some media, but only media that teaches them how to, like, cooperate and get along and not be violent, but we also want them to fight using Xbox. And it's just sort of one of those things where, like, every little detail you get more and more about this, you're like, but wait, but why?
But why?
Right.
There's the scene of, like, mixed adults reading Fun with Dick and Jane as, like, a reading lesson, seemingly, which was kind of like, again, why?
Right.
There was another bit that was kind of interesting, but I was like, was in that same conversation between Laurent and Merrick, right?
Yeah.
And Laurent asked him at one point, he was like, well, if the original ScarJo is
dead,
which he was basically saying it was, like, too late to get her.
I agree with Jimon's thoughts in that, but the thing, Sean Bonn explicitly says it might be too late for her. He doesn't say she's definitely brain dead, like, there's nothing we can do at this point. He says, like, they're gonna cut her open and try and put these organs in, but it might have been too long.
Got it.
And then Jimon says, so you're going to kill her anyway. And my thought to that is, like, well, no, they're going to kill her to try and do the thing that they were going to try and do with her.
Okay.
It's not like Scarlett Johansson. If he had come in and said, like, well, thank you for getting cloned Scarlett, but real Scarlett died, but we're going to kill this one anyway.
I think I misunderstood the scene then, because...
To be fair, they probably would have killed her.
No, I agree. No, yeah, that's the thing, too. It's like, it would have been also one thing if he had just come in and said, like, well, real Scarlett is dead, but thank you for bringing this one in. Like, you really simplified this for us. We just got to go shoot her in the head, and then we'll get you your paycheck.
So that's what I was thinking. I thought the situation was that real ScarJo is dead, and... simply to meet their, like, corporate responsibility, they're going to destroy the clone.
Right, I think that would have been a lot more interesting, but Sean
Bean...
Because
then you're like, what then is the message here about, like, it's like a waste of resources to some extent, but the waste of a human life, and you're doing this all because of a contract, and...
Yeah.
Right. And arguably that could be contributing also to Jimon Hansu's face turn that he has in Act 3 anyway.
Even if it's a little much.
Right. It's just a little like sudden and like, but why now? But the thing though is that he gives the ambiguity where he says like, she might die or she might be okay. We're not really sure. And that I think like, is the problem.
Even if your business is reprehensible, where you're using another live human being to save a different one. Like, obviously, if the policy is open, you are under contract.
Right.
And you would have to do it. Like,
right.
That's just good business.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Just following contract.
Right. This is like, this is what you agreed to do. So,
I don't blame you for cutting her open.
Right.
You have a contract.
Right. So, yes, I mean, it's reprehensible, but this is what you do.
Lee
said, kill those clones.
That's the correct protocol in that situation.
Yeah. Lee would be working with Sean Bond and Kim Coates in that lab. I guess we're kind of in the weeds of the plot, I guess, at this point.
Okay.
It is.
Lee, we've been talking about.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Lee, what was the thing you had a big problem with?
Oh,
I have a big...
The police suspecting them of murder, right?
So they escape whatever, the Yucca Maglev station,
right.
Which I didn't know that's what it was called. the train that they're on is called a Maglev. After Steve Buscemi... playing McCord, it gives them, you know, the tip off that the goons are there.
By shouting, run.
By shouting,
right.
Run.
From the balcony.
Right. Just run from the balcony. Get shot on the balcony. They
right.
are fully not on the balcony. They
yeah.
are somewhere different.
Right, they are down on the lower level,
yeah.
looking up at him.
And they, I know that they have, presumably they also have his credit card, so that's probably part of the investigation, but they get on the train, they go to LA, which is... quite a distance.
Yeah, I mean, who's like, to be fair, we don't know how long a maglev train takes,
yeah.
but like, nonetheless.
Had to be several hours.
Right, I'm gonna say it's gonna be a bit.
Yeah, a bit of time and distance. They get to LA, they're able to move around for quite a bit of time, and they're like looking up records and stuff, they make some phone calls, Jimon Hansu's character's like hunting them, and then they get cornered by the police, and they're like, we're arresting you on suspicion of killing
McCord.
Right.
And it's like, you're not even a local. You're miles away from
right,
where
right,
I got
right.
killed. The cops in real life have never been that quick.
Yeah.
To serve. There's paperwork has got
to
be.
Right. If you wanted to sell that we're in a, like, Minority Report level, like, surveillance state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If that exists, and the police are really that efficient to move that quickly, would they not also have the ability to figure out, oh, they were on a completely different floor of the building and could not have possibly shot
right.
yeah.
McCord?
And this really set off a series of...
whys
for me, because... Number one, like, I understand why we have to get the police involved. Plot-wise, it's a good mechanic.
Right.
Because as the Laurent says, it's bad if the police get to them because they're going to DNA test them.
Right.
The DNA will reveal that actually there are two people who one of them should be in the hospital.
Right.
And one of them, there's two of them now.
Right.
So how'd that happen? And that's bad news for business. The other, so I understand why that's what we want this thing to happen. Now they have to get them before the police gets them and their DNA tested. But, like... There are so many more better ways for the police to become involved. Like, there are any number of these two ignorant people who have never been out in the world before could have broken so many laws
right.
by accident or on purpose in desperation to get information, to get the information about their, you know, highly, like, exclusive and hard-to-reach people. They could have broken so many laws
right.
to get access to them or their information that put the police on their tail. They also could have just gone to the police, by the way,
yeah.
which would have been a great idea for them anyway, because if they just go to the police and be like, hey, test me, baby.
Yeah.
I'm this guy.
Right,
this
like,
girl.
Yeah, I'm telling you, this is me.
Yeah, that's plot over. Like,
yeah.
Right.
Actually, the movie just ends there.
Right. And it's sort of like, even if you did do that, then you could do something interesting where maybe, like, the chief of police has a clone, too, so he has a vested interest
yeah.
in keeping this quiet.
So,
he's like, I'll deal with this. Like, you guys don't worry about this. I'm going to take care of this. And then, like it's like, you can still make complications by having a logical progression of activity.
Yeah, it just doesn't, it really broke that. The logical progression for me when I just really got hung up on that, and it's not a big thing to get hung up on, but it's such an easily fixable thing.
Well, because that you could deliver the police putting pressure on the situation in so many other ways. It didn't have to be like this.
Yeah, I
couldn't
think
it have been that the police are corrupt?
Yeah,
and are under Merrick's thumb.
Yeah,
couldn't it be?
Well, I mean, if they're under Merrick's thumb, then it's probably fine.
Right, then he doesn't need Jimon. He doesn't need Jimon Hansu to come trap him down.
That's a good point.
But I mean, yeah, it just, like, if you're watching this brainlessly, you may not notice, but I just really bothered me. It's like, wait, how does he think that they... How do they know?
Yeah.
And by the way, they're wrong as well.
Right.
They're wildly wrong. It's easily verifiable that they did not kill, because if there's such a surveillance state, there'd be fucking footage.
Yeah, exactly. Of them standing...
Guy,
right, some guy shooting him on that level.
Right. Yeah.
And like then the two of them down there being like, oh no, run away. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So it's like, obviously they should be able to know that they didn't kill him.
Yeah. I mean, also similar to that, also involving Steve Buscemi's character, the fact that whenever they're talking to him, Ewan McGregor suggests, like, okay, well, then we have to go to Los Angeles and I have to find my client doppelganger.
Yeah.
And then he will want to help us. And then once people see the two of us next to each other, they'll be like, oh no, clones. How is this happening? Let's ask questions.
Yeah.
And Steve Buscemi is, at first, he's a little dismissive of the idea, because he says the thing about how, like, no one wants to, like, what, you want the hamburger, but you don't want to meet the cow or something like
that.
Which, like, that's fine. But then Steve Buscemi, like, kind of sort of seems to think that, like, actually, this might be a good idea. Like, maybe you should do this. Because you would think, if anything, Steve Buscemi should just say, like, no, look, don't try and find the person who needs you to survive. Go to the police instead or something like that. Like, there are any number of things that even if Lincoln has a dead set in his head that, like, I need to expose this, Steve Buscemi should suggest other options that would make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Like you said, go to the police.
Because this is a terrible idea.
Right, no, it's an incredibly terrible idea, because as soon as real Ewan McGregor shows up, you immediately know that, like, okay, he's going to double cross
right.
him. He's a sack of shit. Where, you know, and he explicitly even says, like, I have cirrhosis, I have X number of years to live, I'm going to need your liver, that's why I made you. And I realize that Ewan McGregor clone is like a 15-year-old, but even as a 15-year-old, you should be like, okay, I'm working with someone who has made me for the purpose of extending his own life, which will be ending in a few years. I don't think he's going to just sort of, out of the goodness of his heart, take me to a TV studio and like, look, clones, they're real.
Right.
What have we done?
I understand that making the clones mentally or emotionally younger than their bodies does have somewhat of an in-universe explanation, right? Like,
right.
Ewan McGregor has the body of a 30-year-old, but he's, or 30-ish-year-old, I guess, but he's like 3 in terms of how long he's actually been alive.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So I get all of that. However, it does feel like more often that trait, this sort of like dumber than they appear trait, is really just there to cover kind of these kinds of plot contrivances. Why would these people trust this guy? Why would they go here? Why would they do this?
It almost comes and goes, I think, too.
Yes,
it's there for jokes, because you have the scene at the bar where the bartender's like, oh yeah, Steve Buscemi's taking a dump in the can, and Ewan's like, he's in a can?
Taking
a dump?
I wish there was more of that.
I mean,
I feel like we get little pieces of that, but I know I'm trying to say that was like the finest written comedy I've ever heard, but I liked that they were trying to do something a little silly with it.
Right.
Have a little fun with it.
That's also like less I'm mentally 15 or 3 and more just like fish out of water.
Right. Slang has no meaning to me.
Yeah, like Thor and or Earth stuff.
Right.
It's like, I don't know how the world operates around any of these words.
Right.
Which is, you know, when it deployed well, is always a good time.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah.
A joke like that really has no bearing on your actual intelligence. It just has to deal with, like, what do you know culturally?
But, like, the ability to, like, I don't know, reason things out, like, oh, yeah, I have this matchbox that says Route 39, and we are on Route 39. That means we can follow it and find this bar.
Right.
It looked very smart.
Yes.
But then, like, thinking that you're a clone that hired you.
Right, that Steve Buscemi literally just explained people are making you to harvest your organs, and you think, like, well, I'll go see him and everything will be great.
Suddenly capacity to reason is gone.
Right, yes, exactly.
It's like,
But again, it's to cover up the intention of having the scene where you can have Ewan McGregor talk to Ewan McGregor.
Right, exactly.
Because you know you gotta have that scene.
Of course.
You always knew you had to have that scene.
You knew there was going to be with this kind of clone story, especially if you haven't seen the movie before, but you kind of know who Michael Bay is and what he does. Mm-hmm. He's gonna go a lot of Route 1 directions, and that's gonna be you're seeing double, and then there's going to be a switcheroo.
Right.
There's going to be the scene no, he's the clone. No, he's the clone.
Right,
And there's going to be are clones human kind of question being played with.
Yeah.
And it does just feel like this movie just sort of box checked.
Yeah.
They didn't really have any fun with a lot of them, but they just sort of box checked.
Right, right. And I think similarly, I have a lot of questions, I guess, kind of about, like, why are the clones taught, or why do they do things at all to a certain point?
I don't know.
And, like, I get that they said they need to live in order for their organs to function and eventually be harvested. But there are things like, why did they teach them to read at all? You know, like, you feel like you could just sort of sidestep that. They don't need to know how to read.
Why let them do that weird PlayStation Move fight thing if you don't want
Chris,
them
please, Xbox.
I'm sorry, if you don't want them to be capable of violence or even know about it. Why even introduce the concept of violence to them?
Right. No, it just seems like there are so many ways around the problems that this movie creates for itself by explicitly saying things like, oh, we breed them to not have a sexual drive. And then it's almost like a Jurassic Park thing where it's like, exactly. Like, we thought that we hadn't made them horny, but we made them so horny.
Yeah.
Well, and if you're in this world where you can just create these just like, you know, adult clones, just like upon creation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like they're hypergrown. They kind of implied that they're just created that way, it seems like.
Yeah, they're just, they're
which is weird too.
Which
it does not make
any sense to me, because if you have a 79-year-old man, I don't know what use having a 79-year-old clone body is going to be for you, because you're going to have the same old liver be put into you.
Right.
So why wouldn't you just have a genetically identical clone made of you who's like 30 or 40 years older?
Yeah. Let's not think about it.
Exactly. I mean,
just don't worry about it,
guys. The movie doesn't really want to engage with that, which, whatever, that's fine. But
then you start to ask the questions.
Well, because if we're in a world where we can do that, why even give them genitals? I guess unless you need to do a transplant, whatever. But you know what I mean?
I agree.
If you're worried about them breeding, then just make them infertile.
Right. No, I mean, like, that's the thing too. Like, I've thought about all these things too, and it's one of those things where, like, there are answers to all of these that the movie just sort of goes halfway to addressing, and then it's just like, we got to move on to something.
Well, because ultimately,
we care about.
And this is not a strike against the movie, but it doesn't care about that shit, and that's okay.
Right.
I just think it touches on these things and gets our minds thinking about them, and then it's difficult to snap back into the movie.
No, exactly.
Because we're chasing down this other lead.
Right.
Yeah.
And I just, like, the things were like, oh, the clones also are somehow obtaining the memory of the people, which to me, I'm just like, okay, what now? Like, where is this coming from?
Which would suggest that sharing genetic material also means you're somewhat psychic with that person.
Assassin's Creed lore.
Yes, exactly.
That's how Assassin's Creed works.
You're like, you tap into your genetic memory.
Yeah.
Right. But it's just such a weird thing where Sean Bond is like, oh, like, this is an aberration. Like, how weird that this is happening now. Like, this is like a much weirder issue than you're making it out to be, my dude.
Explain it. Or
yeah,
or
no, it's just
it,
like,
really.
And, like, and I think, like, that's something you could easily write out of the movie and not have to deal with. But I don't know why the movie is so interested in dealing with that, except to be like, well, the clones are like people because they have memories from the original host bodies, and I guess that's why it's there.
Right.
But it's like, again, you're just raising so many more questions that I feel like you need to spend time addressing.
I know I'm human because I have the memories my father had.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess we should talk about the little controversy.
The what, sorry?
The controversy.
Oh, yeah, the parts, right. So, just real quick, worth mentioning, I think, there is a movie from 1979 called Parts the Clonus Horror, which was a low-budget sci-fi movie, which sort of came out, didn't really do too much, and was mostly notable because it was on Mystery Science Theater in 1997.
Uh-huh.
And so that's kind of why anyone knew about it.
Have you watched?
Oh, of course. I watched it many times. It is strikingly similar to this movie, is what I would say. It's clearly a lower budget movie, so there's not a lot of, you know, car chases or big action sequences. But the whole premise is just that there is a community of clones being raised in this isolated area, and they are being, which I kind of love, actually, instead of being told that they're going to the island, they're told, you're going to America, which I really love.
Oh.
So I'm like, it feels like it's such a, like, a prescient 1980s Reaganism thing, where it's like, America's where we all want to go. We got to go to America. And, like, that's the best place anyone could ever want to be.
It's actually death.
Right, it's actually like, we're killing you, and we're using your body parts to keep old rich people alive longer. That's America, baby.
That's beautiful.
And so, like, I think there's, again, like this, there's a lot of interesting ideas in play in that movie. A lot of things that, you know, they try to bring up, but maybe aren't necessarily able to because of budgetary concerns or what have you. But it's one of the less bad movies that Mystery Science Theater has done. And it has an interesting premise, which I think this movie also has that interesting premise. There was a lawsuit from, I believe, the writer and, like, the production team of Parts of the Clonus Horror brought up against DreamWorks, which was handled, what's the word I'm looking for?
Out of court?
Yeah, out of court, yes, thank you. For, I want to say, like, 6 or 7 figures or something like that. So it really seems like DreamWorks knew that...
They were caught.
Yeah, right. We cannot get away with this sort of thing. And I'm not going to outright say that there's plagiarism happening here, but what I will say is it's very interesting how many of these plot points line up with that movie. Instead of the moth, it's a Coca-Cola can in that one, where he, like, sees a Coca-Cola can, like...
interesting.
Right, no, I kind of agree, too. He sees it on the road, and he's like, well, what is this? I've never seen one of these before. Like, what is this supposed to be? And the guards are like, don't worry about that,
especially tying in with the whole it's not the island, it's America thing.
Right.
That's such a...
Like, the jingoism's American.
I love the direction of this being, like, artifacts of America and consumerism. And,
right.
Like, that's interesting.
Yeah, no, and so it almost... And I think my recollection also, it's been a while since I've seen it, but Clonus also has a much less happy ending where the main character ends up being used for his organs to go into whatever, like, the person who he is a clone of, to Keith and Eli. I think it's supposed to be, like, it's the president or, like, the prospective president or something like that of America.
I love that.
And, like, there's a lot of interesting ideas at play in that movie. And I think, similarly wise, this movie has a lot of interesting ideas, too, that it's kind of bringing to the table. I like parts the clone is for because I think it's kind of dealing with them a little bit more. And I kind of wish the island had deigned to kind of bring up some of these concepts in a little more detail. I mean, the island, I feel, it is, I think, unintentionally anti-capitalist in some sense, you know,
yes.
Because it's talking about, again, literally, like, these rich people are making clones who they will rip open and steal their organs, right? They will rip open these people who they've kept in a lab to make themselves live a little bit longer. There are corporations like Xbox and Aquafina who are in cahoots with this organization because, like, it is good business for them to, you know, have a contract with this evil cloning company. And like, I don't think any of this is really super intentional, but it's easy to read it like that. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why I think The Island is one of the more interesting Michael Bay movies, even if it's not always successful.
Right.
It's interesting.
I would also maybe point out that for whatever contact with these kind of larger political or philosophical ideas that this movie makes, Michael Bay doesn't think about this.
No,
shit.
Of course not. That is not him.
I mean, to whatever extent you can be an apolitical filmmaker, maybe that's taking it too far, but I think any anti-capitalist statement is purely accidental.
No, of course. 100%.
Like, I don't even know that we would think, like, within the movie's logic, we're supposed to be like, yeah, these people are evil, but that doesn't mean, like, large corporations are evil.
Right, right,
like,
right. Right, exactly, exactly. You're not supposed to think too hard about what all this is saying. You're just
right.
supposed to go along with it.
No, I mean, with respect to Michael Bay, my impression of him is that he is a meathead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty fair.
Meathead movies.
Yeah, right. He has a style and he does it well.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
I mean, made scads of money.
I guess the only thing really left is to just kind of go through the roster.
Yeah.
Of cast.
Briefly, kind of. I feel like some of it we kind of covered.
There's not a lot to say.
Yeah. So,
we can talk about Ewan McGregor's American accent.
Oh,
yeah,
my goodness.
His deeply upsetting American accent.
Do you think he felt such relief when he just got to speak in his normal Scottish accent?
I can only assume.
Hope so.
Yeah.
What about when he goes, fake real Ewan McGregor, when Echo is, real Ewan McGregor is shot, Echo assumed his identity, goes into that, like, Merrick corporate office, and the PR guy, maybe he should just be fired at this point, is like, oh, you're Scottish. I mean, I prefer Ireland myself.
When, by the way, during such a PR disaster, and you're a PR guy?
Yeah.
What is wrong with
you? No, I do. He explicitly says something like, I know I talk too much, but I love the fact that, like, while he is very bad at this part of the job, he somehow rose to this position of the company. Like,
as, like, an executive.
Right, he won't shut up, but we still have him in charge of PR.
I also love during the phone call where he's like, you know, I had a home invasion once.
Yeah, I was so scared.
I screamed for 2 days.
Right.
Yeah.
That felt like a very Michael Bay character.
Yes, very much so.
Anyway, I thought his American accent is weird.
Yeah.
I kind of stopped, like, really paying attention to it after a while.
Is that the only time? Have I heard it before?
I'm sure he must have done it for something else. Just off the top of my head, I'm struggling to think of what it would
be. Was he American in the robot movie?
The robot movie?
He was in a robot anime.
You mean like the animated movie Robots? My understanding is that I think he might be, because I feel like I remember reading an interview where he was like, they told me to do an American accent, and I was like, why? Like, you won't understand. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, you're paying all this money for Ewan McGregor, and you're like, now don't sound like Ewan McGregor.
No.
Sound like someone else. You're just sort of like, why?
What, get an American?
Am I the only one that's seen Robots?
I have not seen Robots. I know
you've done a plan as a child.
Maybe we should consider doing Robots.
I mean,
movie.
Sure.
Anyway, I thought Ewan McGregor in this movie was fine.
Yeah,
I got no beef with him.
I don't know that he really has any chemistry with ScarJo, so when they have to have romantic scene, you're like, eh.
I think they're okay chemistry-wise. I would say, like, they're okay. I think I like ScarJo in this a little bit more than I do Ewan.
Same.
But maybe she just gets to do some more interesting shit, I think, perhaps, also.
He's just sort of he's a little bit of a flat character.
No, he is.
Not
he
a flat
is.
Performance. I just mean the character itself is just sort of goes through the motions of a very typical action thriller.
Right, just like in the beginning he's a little angry, and then he's like a little childlike,
right.
And then he like very quickly realizes, oh, I have to pretend to be other Ewan McGregor, so like this is how you act as other Ewan McGregor, and that's my persona for much of the rest of the movie now. So yeah, I don't know.
And then he's like, wow, look at this Cybertruck yacht.
Yes, my
Wait,
fucking Cybertruck.
Big
yeah.
Fish would have been a big one.
He does a southern accent in Big Fish, which by and large people from the UK are better at.
Yeah, because it's a bit closer.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, the sort of like, I don't even know what to call it, It's not quite transatlantic.
No, it's just the sort of like flat American accent.
Flat American. Yeah. It's like a non-existent
accent. It's like someone who might have been from the Northeast, but you would still expect there to be a more regional character to it.
Yeah, it's like, it's like stripped of all local characters.
Yes, exactly.
It's like a newsreader's accent. It's how they would teach someone to deliver the news in broadcast journalism.
I mean, arguably, I don't think this is the case, but you could argue maybe that's the point, that he was trained to have the most nondescript accent.
Yeah.
But again, that goes back to the whole, like,
Why
are we teaching them that? Yeah, anyways. But I digress. Anyways. Yeah.
ScarJo?
I think she's good in this. I like her in this. I think she's fun.
I think she's good in this. I will just say, even though they give her some fun things to do, there are times where you can just feel the camera has rested on her purely because we're, like, here to drink in.
Yep, the face, the body.
Yeah.
There's a scene where there's a full half beat before she says something like, come on! And then there's another full half beat before the camera leaves her.
Yeah.
And she's just staring kind of, like, off camera like this. Like, and it's... The movie just is leering at her.
No, I mean, it's the male gaze.
At all times.
Yeah, the male gaze is all over this movie.
Sean Bond gets to be fun.
There's not much to his character. He's just evil. I think, Lee, you said that it's insane that Sean Bond is asked to do all these different... He is the CEO of this evil company. He also has to be the doctor. He also has to sell this company to potential clients.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just like, shouldn't you be, like, giving these jobs to other people or something? Like I get it, for a movie, you need one face as the villain.
Yeah.
But, like, it's insane that the majority of your day is spent pretending to be a doctor in this facility rather than running your $1 billion company.
It's wild that you have any interfacing with the clones.
Yeah. No, you shouldn't be.
Yeah.
One, I guess they never explained what his connection is really, but to them, like why that's important for him to do. But I just assumed it was movie mechanics. Like,
I guess he's like some sort of like the Apple guy with the turtleneck where he's like
Jobs.
See, like a Steve Jobs type where it's like he has to stay close to it or like he presents.
Right. It's just sort of, like I need to keep this, I know how to make this company work. So if I'm not controlling everything, things are not going
to
go
well. It's like, I need to be, because he apparently a lot of it seems to be his, like, his baby, right? Like,
yeah,
literally
definitely.
And metaphorically. So, like, he is the one that needs to be the one interviewing the clones so he knows when they go fucking wrong. And
also, like, you are the one who has to go hunt down Ewan McGregor at the end, too. It's like, you don't have guys who will be doing that for you,
By
man.
The way,
I don't know.
All the guards, we didn't really talk about how at the end of the movie when the hologram goes down, suddenly there are no guards.
No, I feel like in one shot...
they were awesome.
Well, right. You can tell because the people in black are like the ones who work there.
Yeah.
And there's one shot, I think, of all the clones like looking at the sun and trying to like run up the stairs or something. And you see a couple of people in black being like, no. But it's like, that's it. You've got like three people down there being like, hey guys, stop,
what
please.
What happened to all their harpoon guns?
What happened to doors? Which like, again, is another problem. Like, we kind of blew past it. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because we're wrapping up. But like, they're so easily able to escape from this facility, comparatively speaking. Like, Ewan McGregor is able to get into the secret behind the scenes clone level by going through a panel in the floor. He just pops it open and sneaks out, and that's that. Like, they didn't even weld these panels shut or something. It just feels like they spent no real time making sure that no one would be able to get out of this facility, you know?
Steve Buscemi needs to get in and out of those panels.
That's true.
So,
you gotta have those panels. Hey, when someone has to operate all the pipes underneath the floor, you're gonna want those panels.
You're gonna want those panels.
Anyone else
loose
that we want to call out? I mean, we got, like, Laurent Jimon Hansu.
I think, I like Jimon Hansu in this movie a lot. I think he's a potentially very interesting character who the movie, like, does not...
doesn't spend enough time with.
Right.
And also, the reverse heel turn doesn't make sense.
No, it does not make sense at all, because he's been very okay victimizing these obvious... humans for much of the movie, and then at the end when he sees that ScarJo has a mark on her wrist like the own mark on his palm, he's like, aha, perhaps
he's,
I have been the villain all this time.
Really,
here's what drives me crazy. Why is that the first time you're considering this?
I
why
agree.
Should it need to be, oh, they're also branded? Now there's a connection between
so
our,
here's the
our
thing.
Impression.
The one thing that I was trying to make sense of when I first watched this movie is when you have the scene with the two Ewan McGregors being like, shoot this one, and Jimon Hansu eventually shoots the real Ewan McGregor, who has the bracelet slapped on him in a very obvious fashion by the clone Ewan McGregor.
In front of him.
Right,
which is
right
crazy.
In front of him, to be like, this is the clone here. I was wondering the whole time, like, does he know that he's shooting the real Ewan McGregor. Maybe. I was like,
I think he does. I don't think he does.
I don't think he does either. But I was just thinking, like, that would be potentially interesting. If this is the moment where he starts to realize, like, these are real people. I was told that they're, like, cattle, they're children. They don't understand what they're doing. But, like, this one is using, like, logic and reasoning. And also, this other guy is an asshole. So I don't care if I shoot him. Also, and, like, I almost feel like...
would be, I don't care. That's the highest you get.
No, I agree. And I think, like, part of me was thinking, like, you could have the scene end where when you see him talking to Ewan McGregor and being like, so, like, you won't tell anyone about all this clone craziness, right? I feel like there could be a scene where, like, he goes out to shake Ewan McGregor's hand and he, like, looks at his wrist and just sort of, like, gives it a look like, hmm. Like, he clocks at that moment that, like, yes, indeed, this is the clone. But he's just sort of like, okay, then.
It's just...
And then I was also wondering, I'm sorry to cut you off, but, like, we talked about the weirdness of Scarlett Johansson somehow sneaks a gun into this facility when they capture her at the end.
They didn't pat her down.
Right, they didn't pat her down. They didn't check for this gun or anything like that. I was like, did Jimon Hansu give her the gun? Because you have that one weird shot where she's being dragged down the hallway and you have a long tracking shot pulling away from Jimon Hansu where he's just staring after her. And I was watching that, I was kind of thinking, like, did he slip her the gun? But I don't think he did.
He couldn't, but she would... Because she knew she had a gun.
Right. She would knew, like, her goal was to get captured. And she doesn't think that
Jimon working with her.
Right, no, exactly. So it's just one of those things where, like, it's so stupid that she has a gun in that scene and that no one clocks it as being a thing.
I will also just point out, too, that, and I'm so sorry to dwell on this, but it did just drive me crazy that Jimon Hansu only sees the brand at the very, pretty much like the end of the movie, the last act. Would that not have been something Merrick would run him down on? Of like, here's what the clones look like.
Sure.
Here's an identifying fucking mark.
Right, look for this thing to make sure,
like, who cares about a bracelet? You can obviously take those off.
Right.
You're not taking that brand off.
No, it's just one of those things where you should have said, like, all right, both gentlemen, hold up your wrists. Let's see who's who.
They're not supposed to be able to take them off. UN uses a special tool to get them off.
No, that's true. But I think nonetheless, if both of them don't have a bracelet on, I feel like you should just be like, all right, let's just to be double sure.
Anyway. Laurent really speedrunning his Javert arc.
Yeah, very much so.
Very much.
In a way that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I like Michael Clarke Duncan in his one scene. I think he's very, you know, it's a good performance for one
for
little
very
scene.
Little,
I think that's all I have for actors,
Buscemi
really. Buscemi.
He Buscemi's all over the place.
He's Buscemi'ing all over this picture.
I don't know. He's just, what, like a sleazebag?
He Bushes on my
Chemi. He's Bushing all up on that Chemi.
Okay, good. Acting, we covered him.
Yep, we covered him.
All right, who wants to start with fixes?
I'll go real quick, because there's not a whole lot that I have for this. Because as we said, by and large, this movie mostly functionally works. Aside from the fact that, as we said, there are some plot points that needed to have been fixed. The little thing I would say here is that I just almost feel like Michael Bay was not the director for something like this.
Uh-huh.
At the time, you would think of Spielberg, but Spielberg's production company, DreamWorks, made this movie, so one must assume that Spielberg saw it and was like, eh, not for me. So I don't know who the better choice would have been. My little half-assed thought was maybe just because we've been dealing with him lately, maybe Richard Kelly should have taken a whack at this.
It feels similar
to The Box, where it's like, why don't you take this premise that's kind of been done and go nuts, go fucking nuts with it. I don't know. Maybe something that would have been fun.
Man, what would we have gotten?
The other thing I would say is, clearly this movie is not interested in dealing with sort of the moral ramifications and complexities of this whole conversation, which again goes back to the whole, like, maybe Michael Bay shouldn't have done this movie. I would love to have some more time spent on just kind of dealing with the ambiguities of this. And I think if you did the work, you could have Sean Bond's character have a compelling and authentic reason as to why he's doing this and why he thinks it is morally acceptable for him to do this. Because, I mean, so much of what we do anyway is such a slippery slope with science anyway, right? So it's just sort of, if you can defend why you think that it's okay. Like, if there is a child who's dying of leukemia, is it not your imperative to do something to help this child get better? Yeah, you're making a lot of money off of this, but it's an expensive, absurd process. I mean, look, we have to keep feeding these guys porridge every fucking morning. That porridge don't come free. So I feel like there's time that could be spent making Sean Bond a little bit more of a complex, interesting character. The last thing I would kind of say is that this is probably a whole other movie in general, but the thing I had thought when I saw the scene with Scarlett Johansson talking to the other Sarah Jordan's son on the phone, and then the kid, like, looks at her and is like, Mommy, is that you? Which I think is a really interesting scene that, you know, we have to wrap up quickly because the police are coming. What if her character, the clone Scarlett Johansson, like, sees on TV, like, she sees a supermodel Scarlett Johansson still in a coma, and she sees, like, an interview with the husband who is, like, distraught and in tears and is like, I can't believe my wife's going to die, the mother of our child, kid's miserable and crying too. What if Scarlett Johansson Madison has an arc for the last half of the movie where she's like, is it morally right for me to sacrifice myself for this woman who has a family? Right. And I have none of these things right now. Should I do what she raised me to do? And I'm not saying she should, I'm not saying she shouldn't, but I think that honestly, because her character doesn't really have a decision or something to go off of for much of the movie, maybe that would be an interesting sort of thing for her to have to morally tackle.
I would be, I mean, added to the list of things movie just decides not to tackle.
Right, so those are my brief thoughts there.
All right, sure, I'll go. I have two ideas.
Yeah.
Both of them are very me focused. One of them is wacky. Well, I'll go from least wacky to most wacky.
Okay. Great.
The least wacky one is real Ewan McGregor's good, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't know that he has a clone. That's like a clone was made of him in secret. Like maybe like he's the scion of some company and he had an accident and they were worried that he wasn't going to make it. And they scanned him while he was like comatose or like whatever. And they were like, thought he was going to need the organs. But they didn't tell him and they do go to him and like, he maybe becomes like, and he's not like, he's not dying imminently of some disease. It was just like, well, I mean, they did it, you know.
Just in case.
But yeah, it's your mom took a policy on you. Yeah. And she's kept it open.
Right.
And now you have a clone. Congratulations. and he's like not okay with it. And is somehow like part of the pandemic. I didn't really think through how that would change, but I like the tension that would have because you would be waiting for a heel drop the whole time.
Right.
And I think that maybe he takes the fall or either dies or gets seriously injured. Instead of the clone.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe you think that like Lincoln Six Echo has like failed, but then they reveal that like actually that
was the real Lincoln who sacrificed himself. Lincoln. Yeah.
That would be pretty interesting.
Yeah. The other one was a vastly different version of this story where it's been going on for a lot longer. And the way it works is that you do it ahead of, it's sort of like Gattaca. In Gattaca, you like genetically pre-select your traits for your baby.
Mm-hmm.
In the Gattaca version of this, you open a policy on your child and like have identical twins. And one twin is a reserve copy of your, of your child so that if anything happens to their organs.
Mm-hmm.
And so like all of the clones are like sort of secret identical twins to the like one above.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you have the two of them, the like, say, like Elka, whatever the fuck they are, Lincoln and Delta, whatever
Jordan.
Names? Jordan, Lincoln and Jordan. And like one's sibling is, it turns out to be a shithead and one turns out to be normal and good. And it's like, it creates like a really tense situation in the end where it's like they both find their siblings up top. And I think I would probably incorporate some like weird like twin connection shit as well.
Right.
Where like,
Psychic twin
shit where like that's how they start to sort of bleed through and how they kind of realize that like there's something beyond this myth of wherever the lie they're being told on the island. And that's how like Lincoln first finds out. But yeah, I kind of like the idea that it would be like they'd have like these siblings and that in that one they would just be like, obviously one of them's gonna be like you're just like I like the idea of there being tension. And I think that the fun about this clone thing is having that like conversation with yourself kind of a thing, like you're meeting your other self or your clone. And so I just want to amp up. Let's have more of that. Let's get the clones talking.
Let's put them all in a room.
Let's put them talking.
Let's get them organized. Let's mobilize them.
And let's make it a bit more social, the movie, and have the tension be more social and less explosions.
Democratize wishes, democratize clones.
Democratize the clones.
Okay. My brief kind of fix is I really think there's a much stronger anti-capitalist emphasis and direction you could take this in. And I think there's also quite a bit of like pulp possibility here. So my thinking was the setup is largely the same. They are clones being kept in this kind of isolated silo community. But I think the changes I would make is the clones are aware that they are not, like, they are in a, like, silo facility.
Mm-hmm.
But what they are being told is that the work you are doing here is for, like, to save the world to some extent. I think maybe they all have a vague, not super specific understanding of what that is. I think, I resisted this idea of making them, like stupid clones or whatever. But I think they would all generally believe that it's either they're, like, curing a disease or they're working on purifying water or something like that. But that the reality of the situation is that they are one of many silo facilities that represent some kind of evil science gone amok shit that is all there to serve the continued survival of this, like, last enclave of what would have been, like, formerly rich people who are able to survive the apocalypse and now have sunk significant resources into, like, well, we have our clone silo where we can go and get organs from them. We have another silo where we're, like, creating, like, animals for livestock. We have another silo. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that if there's ever a thing that they need manpower for, they're just, they can create clones to do that. And what I think this would set up, which would be kind of interesting, is if our, you know, if we still have our Lincoln and Jordan clones, sure, there are going to be the rich originals, which are going to be these kind of, like, ghoulish people, you know, sipping wine while they watch the rest of the world burn kind of situation. Mm-hmm. But there would also be a truck driver version over on, like, this area, or there's, like, a professor version over here on this area. I like this idea that they're just sort of being referred to as products instead of people. I think you can take that further. I think, you know, they're referred to as maybe, like, as literal objects. But yeah, anyway, I think it's a really solid concept. I would love to have seen it, had seen the volume turned up in the themes, and to embrace more of the kind of the pulp sci-fi aspect of it.
I would also throw out real quick, I would eliminate the sex scene from mine because I think it's weird.
Hell yeah. It's so sudden, it comes out of nowhere.
No, it does. And I would include a scene where the two Ewan McGregors explore each other's bodies.
Oh my god.
5 minutes of that.
Now, see, that is a sex scene I feel like would be really interesting.
That's the sex scene that I want. As soon as, like, the other Ewan McGregor shows up, he's like, oh boy, let's go upstairs real quick and check a few things out.
I need to check the merchandise.
Yeah. Happy in the first half. All right. Well, that, guys, that is The Island. Would we recommend this movie to people?
I might.
I would.
I would.
This is a pretty solid, dumb. Like, yeah, it's dumb and it could be better, but it's not bad.
Yeah, turn your brain off. Don't agonize about how they got arrested.
Yeah, don't think about any of
that guy.
Just go along with everything that's presented to you.
Honestly, don't think of any of the questions you raised during this podcast.
Enjoy the virtua boxing.
Right. It is still, I think, a little too long. Like, if this were a half hour shorter, it would be an unquestionable yes.
I did ask how many minutes were left, and I was upset by the answer.
Yes.
Because, yeah, well...
It is over 2 hours long.
When pizza arrived, and we paused, and you guys got up before I did, and I noticed, I was like, it said we were about 45 minutes in and still had, like, an hour 20 or something to go, and I was like, Jesus, fuck.
I know, yeah.
I do also just wanted to point out the virtual boxing.
Mm-hmm.
I love that... Ewan McGregor's virtual avatar.
He spits out virtual teeth.
Virtual teeth.
So fun.
Anyways,
guys, come back at us in 2 weeks. We'll be back with another mini episodes. And we'll introduce the movie we'll be doing next.
Yep.
In the meantime,
Dropback.com. Podcast apps. Yeah.
Give us stars.
Subscribe.
Feel free to check out Spotify. Madly trying to transcribe our conversation.
Yeah, enjoy our automated AI-generated chapter breaks.
Right, which are unsettling and accurate.
Or sometimes on point, other times not.
Yeah.
So have fun with that.
Yeah, let's buy it out.
Bye!